Welcome to the Geriatric Journal Club, featuring practical discussions on the front line of PALTC issues that you wrestle with every day. This podcast is a joint presentation of the Colorado Journal Club and the Society for Post-Acute and Long-Term Care Medicine. References for this podcast and links to previous recordings can be found at paltc.org/journalclub. This podcast is eligible for ABPLM pre-approved certified medical director credits. Details will be provided at the end of this podcast.
My name is Travis Neal. I am a PA practicing in post-acute care and assistant to the medical director for VIVAGE. Our goal with the Journal Club is to promote education through quick, relevant geriatric and post-acute care specific information that you can use in your practice tomorrow. Today, our topic is thyroid issues, and our speaker is none other than Dr. Greg Gomm, the Chief Medical Officer for VIVAGE and Multi-Facility Medical Director, and the, I would say, the owner and starter of the Geriatric Journal Club that has now reached quite a few people through the AmDoGo On The Go podcast. So I'll turn it over to Greg.
This talk really is going to focus not so much on a particular article or two or dive deep into a specific topic. This is really pearls. I learned this years ago from a friend who wrote books on pearls in medicine. And so hopefully these are things you can apply as you deal with thyroid issues. And places, a lot of this comes from places where I've seen a lot of mistakes made. So we're going to try to cover some of that. There are some articles, they go into a lot of details. Feel free to use them as references. If you ever get really interested, I have a digital library with a lot more references. I'll be glad to share anything I have in education. And again, because these are pearls, we're really gonna try to deal with the 99%+ of things that are normal thyroid issues. We're not going to try to deal with strange squamous cell carcinomas that are putting out TRH or even thyroid cancers other than a couple places where I'll mention some things. This is the people that you're going to see that are either on thyroid replacements or have thyroid problems that need to be identified. Okay, so this is a list. I'm not going to read through these now because we're hopefully going to hit all of these things. These are the pearls we're going to try to cover today. Some basics, just to go over them. Most of the thyroid coming out of your thyroid gland is T4. T4 is converted to T3, which is much more active. T3 accounts for almost all of the activity from thyroid hormone. There are two different T3s you need to know about. T3 comes about through deiodinases that you remove an iodine from one of the rings around the thyroid hormone. From the outer circle, if you remove an iodine, it becomes T3, and that's active T3 that we want in our bodies to make things work. If you remove an iodine from the inner circle, then that becomes inactive or inert T3, which of interest, when you draw T3 levels, the lab does not distinguish between active and inactive T3. It just gives you a total T3. Reverse T3 is associated with things like reduced metabolic rates, things like starvation, chronic heart failure, in particular when that's associated with atrial fib, non-thyroidal illness. So we used to call it euthyroid sick. That's the way I learned it. I think you still can. But the idea there is if your TSH is elevated, but the patient is actually euthyroid, because there are conditions where you make a whole bunch of reverse T3, and some of them are listed here. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a minute, like right now. So euthyroid sick. TSH is falsely elevated. Unfortunately, it frequently gets misinterpreted as hypothyroidism. And the most common place that occurs is in the hospital. And the reason for that, of course, is because you got really well-intended, bright people that have access to all the labs and x-rays you could ever think of. and they remember back from medical school that something is associated with thyroid. They want to know what it is, so they start ordering labs. And they get a lab, and it shows a TSH of 13 or 14. And then they all they have to do is look at the lab slip and find out, oh, wait a minute, normal is 0.4 to 4.5. This is abnormal. I've solved their problem. They're hypothyroid. These idiots out here in the community just didn't even recognize it. I'm going to start them on Synthroid, and life's going to be good. And so then they show up to you in your nursing home, and you see, oh, they're on Synthroid because they're hypothyroid, and you leave them on it forever. And you never look back. You never question, how was this made? When was this made? And in fact, a lot of it has to do with what we just talked about. Acutely ill folks, especially heart failure, but really pneumonia, any major infection can cause this. So I never trust a TSH. It was done in the hospital with treatment started, unless it was done by an endocrinologist that really knew what they were doing, and they were there because of a thyroid problem. The pearl here is that unless thyroid disease was suspected as a contributor to the hospitalization, wait till the patient's at or close to their baseline before you check their TSH, before you make the diagnosis or you change their supplement dose. So that's the first pearl, understanding what euthyroid sick is, when to do it. Next, we're going to move to assessing thyroid function. It is important to understand there's a log linear relationship between free T4 and TSH. So little tiny changes in free T4 lead to big changes in the TSH. One thing I didn't put in the slides, but that I will teach you right here, right now, this log linear relationship, if you go to the PATH lab and figure out how they do a TSH, it is a logarithmic scale, so that a change from, you know, we see a TSH of 15, 20, 30, 60, and we get really scared, like, oh my gosh, you're really hypothyroid, better jump on this quickly. But then at the other end of the spectrum, you see somebody go from 1 down to 0.3, and it's like, well, so what? You know, change less than 1 point, what do I care? Or they go from 0.6 down to 0.1. or 0.1 down to less than 0.02. It's like, well, okay, they're only 0.3 away from being normal. But in fact, because of the logarithmic relationship, you go from 0.4 to 0.1 might be the equivalent of going from 4 to 75. So again, it's that scale of 10. It's a huge change. So what I would tell you, TSH, we've gone through three generations of TSH since it came about. We're now, every good lab is using a third generation TSH, and it is accurate to within 0.01. So if you get a level of 0.32, means it could be 0.31 or 0.33, but it's not outside that range. It is really accurate. From up to date, I just threw in this quote, thyroid function is best assessed by measuring the serum TSH, assuming steady state conditions and the absence of pituitary or hypothalamic disease. If you're pretty sure they don't have one of those, TSH, and I would tell you, make your life simple. I like simple. Anything you can do to simplify what you're doing, do it. Don't be misled by an erroneous free T4, T4, T3, you know, the whole battery. This is a case where simple is good. Trust the TSH. Unless you have one of those less than 1% of conditions we talked about, trust the TSH. Don't order all that other stuff. It's just going to throw you off, because I can't count on two hands. I can't even count on two hands and 2 feet the number of times in the past year I've seen people with a suppressed TSH, less than 0.02, but a T4 was checked and it was normal. So everybody thought life's good. T4 is where it should be. Leave it alone. If that, with a couple exceptions, if that TSH is suppressed, it's suppressed. That's the number you want to trust. Biotin. Actually, I'm going to skip ahead. So there are so many people out there trying to get really strong fingernails, and I'm not sure what other things biotin does, but I'm sure it cures cancer, makes your hair thick. I'm sure it does all kinds of things. and I'm not trying to be too sarcastic, just a little. Biotin interferes with the thyroid assay. We have a lot of folks on biotin. If you're going to check thyroid tests, it, of all the different things we're going to talk about today, this is one of those other pearls just to keep it back in your mind. If you've got somebody on biotin, you have to stop it more than 2 days ahead of checking thyroid tests, especially TSH. It will lead to a falsely low TSH, and you don't want to think somebody's hyperthyroid if they're not. So stop it 2 days before, let them know their fingernails will grow back, and you'll restart it after you've drawn their TSH, but you just need an accurate test. Other things that, other drugs that mess with the thyroid, if you want this, this is actually out of our recent New England Journal, and I think the reference is on one of these slides. If not, it's in the past month. Amiodarone messes with everything thyroid. In 5 to 10% of people, it causes a destructive thyroiditis where you raise T3 and T4 and decrease TSH. By weight, amiodarone is more than one-third iodine, providing more than 45 times the recommended daily allowance of intake of iodine. So that in and of itself leads to hyperthyroidism in a whole bunch of people. If you know much about thyroid, you realize a lot of times, you know, with Graves and even with treatment, you essentially wipe out the thyroid gland by giving people too much iodine, which leads to early on to hyperthyroid state, and over time wipes it out in a hypothyroid state. And so amiodarone can cause either hypo or hyperthyroidism, depending on where you are in the process. It's just a bad drug on the thyroid. And speaking of bad drugs, lithium is right there, causes a goiter and hypothyroidism by decreasing thyroid hormone release in about one patient in five. So that's a real common problem there. Other things, methadone, unfortunately, we're seeing lots and lots more methadone use these days. It increases thyroid binding globulin, which then of course leads to hypothyroidism. So, and that's a real one that you, as long as you're going to use the methadone, you're going to probably have to add thyroid supplement. If you start taking the methadone away, it's just, you don't have to remember this, but look it up in the back of your mind that, oh yeah, I might have to mess with the thyroid. I don't remember how, but go look it up again. Glucocorticoids. Are terribly valuable. We're going to talk about them here in a few minutes, but they do a whole bunch of things. The thing that I'm going to focus on later is the fact that they inhibit conversion of T4 to T3 peripherally. They do that whether you ask them to or not. So if you give somebody steroids, put them on it for very long, they're going to eventually become hypothyroid, probably. So keep that in mind. We're going to talk about it later as part of the treatment strategy for people that you identify that are terribly hyperthyroid, because it's one way to help bring the symptoms down. Other things they do, suppress thyrotropin release, which is minor impact, and they do the opposite of methadone. They decrease thyroid binding globulin, which leads to an increase in TSH. The other thing, just because we use it so commonly, PPIs interfere with absorption in a big way of thyroid hormone or of thyroid supplements because they really require an acidic milieu to dissolve and be absorbed. Other things, iron, calcium, sucrophate, cholestyramine, all interfere with absorption. Question.
Yeah, so would the glucocorticoids be a situation where we would want to get the T4 and T3 values?
Yes, you could. It depends on how long you're going to use them. If you're going to use them for a longer period of time, probably free T4 and TSH taken together would be a good combination. If it's just treating somebody for a couple weeks for their gout or 5 days, you know, for their COPD exacerbation, don't worry about it. So here, the pearl at the end of this sort of subsection of the talk is just use the TSH. Get used to using TSH. You can ask your lab if you want to make sure The second generation TSH was only good to within 0.1. And if you're a purist, that might be enough error that you might not want to trust it. But even that's probably okay. But you can ask them. But TSH all by itself. T4, not a very good way to track dosing or much of anything else except thyroid cancer. We can talk about that a little bit in a minute. Secondary hypothyroidism, if you do have secondary hypothyroidism, using a free T4 is appropriate. And you're trying to maintain free T4 in the upper 50% of normal. You're probably, hopefully, if you get to that point, you're going to have help with that, because not many primary care providers feel really comfortable dealing with the outlier thyroid issues. And there's no reason. I mean, it's the same reason that we don't do much in the world of oncology. It's okay. Thyroid cancer, I'm not going to say a whole lot about it, except that oftentimes we give extra thyroid replacement trying to suppress the cancer. If you're not going to surgically remove it or, you know, ablate it somehow, you're just going to try to suppress it even after limited surgery. The idea there is to keep the TSH somewhere between 0.05 and 0.1. It's not to completely obliterate them. So if you get that, the lowest that the TSH measures is less than 0.02. If you see that, you're given too much replacement. But if you see it up around 0.3, 0.4, 0.5, you're not given enough. So that's the one exception that you're trying to over-treat them. Okay. So next one is a real pearl. This one's actually 4 years old, but it just word getting out is slow. 4 years ago, the American Thyroid Association and the American, I don't know what it is, Association of Endocrinologists or something, looked at all the data, reviewed the literature, started looking at this and figured out that what we've been calling for the previous 30 years, just subclinical hypothyroidism of the elderly, probably was not. As we age, for a whole bunch of reasons, some of which we've already discussed briefly, the normal level just shifts. So as of 4 years ago, the updated ideal target for patients over age 70 is a TSH of 4 to 6. And, you know, so I would just say, again, that's one of those really key pearls to take away today. Because if you're seeing a TSH of 1.2 and you think that's pretty good, because it, you know, the lab said it's 0.4 to 4 or whatever your lab gives you as normals, it's not. For seniors, that level is 4 to 6. We're going to jump around a little bit, but now we're going to talk a little bit more about hyperthyroidism. A relatively recent concept is subclinical hyperthyroidism. By definition, this is really a suppressed TSH, so a low TSH, with normal T3 and T4 levels. In normal adults, and this isn't in the literature, this is me trying to take what's in the articles and turn it into something practical that you can remember and apply. A TSH less than 1 in adults or less than 2 in seniors is probably subclinical hyperthyroidism. And again, if you're just tracking the TSH, like I'm trying to get you to do, that's good enough. So if you see a TSH of 1.6 in somebody that's 85 years old, they have roughly 3 times the risk of atrial fibrillation they would have if their TSH was 4 to 6. That all in and of itself is enough reason to say, what should we do? And depends on how you're treating them. It's usually, if you see it that low in our population, it's usually iatrogenic. We're giving them thyroid supplements and we're just giving them too much. So you could, if it's in, we'll talk about when to do what in a minute, but you can usually just cut back and recheck. The risk of subclinical hyperthyroidism, I just listed the 5 most common things. Atrial fib, we talked about. Anxiety, had a patient just yesterday, TSH 0.02, less than 0.02. And we're trying to get her off of her benzos because she's been anxious forever, been on benzos forever. But we don't have data to know how long she's been overtreated with her thyroid supplements. We just picked this up recently. So we don't know. So maybe if we fix her thyroid, the anxiety goes away, and then we can withdraw her benzos. Osteoporosis is accelerated. Cognitive decline is accelerated. And there's probably increased mortality, although separating that from the atrial fib is interesting that there is no increase in cardiovascular mortality with this in older persons. We'll talk about where that occurs in a minute. Here, the consensus recommendation of the American Thyroid Association and the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists, that's the group I was trying to think of a few minutes ago, is to treat subclinical hypothyroidism only in people with a TSH greater than 10. Okay, so then the question comes, what do you do if you're telling me 4 to 6 is normal and don't treat all the time unless it's over 10? Well, 6 to 10 is a pretty wide range for these folks. What do I do there? And there it's a clinical correlation. If you look at them clinically and you think they have symptoms, could be related to hypothyroidism, go ahead and treat them. If they don't have symptoms relative to hypothyroidism, which I'm not going to talk about today, it's prudent just to wait, follow them a year later. And that's because there's some really good data from about 2 years ago that shows that there is no increase in morbidity or mortality if you leave that 6 to 10 range alone and you don't treat it. Okay, dosing, real quick on this. In normal adults, half-life of thyroid supplement is 6 to 7 days, but that increases with age. Therapeutic life in a normal adult is 8 to 11 days, about 1.5 times the half-life. In seniors with a half-life of 9 to 11 days, the therapeutic life of a single dose is about 12 to 16 days. I learned this from my program director, who was a thyroidologist, and also from Chip Ridgway, who was a thyroidologist at the University of Colorado, used to be the head of endo, who treated essentially in their entire thyroid practice, everybody got their thyroid either once a week, or in some cases, if compliance is a real problem, every other week, every 2 weeks in seniors. In my facilities, we've been doing this for 20 to 25 years. And I would guess in the Colorado market that I'm aware of, there might be 2,000 to 3,000 patients that have been on weekly thyroid dosing for a decade or more. And just to let you know, I really believe in this. Both my mother and mother-in-law have been on weekly thyroid for 30 years. In my facilities, we do thyroid Thursdays. Just because it's very alliterative and we have the normal nurses there. And if we do everybody in the building on the same day, either 10 in the morning, 2 in the afternoon, they all get their thyroid at the same times. And the nurses know all those folks get their thyroid and nobody gets snacks or other drugs 9 to 11 in the morning. So they get once a week, absorption's not a problem. At any rate, there's some reasons there to do it. We're just going to keep going. Iatrogenic hyperthyroidism. Real quick, if the TSH is 0.2 to 0.4, and we've got somebody on thyroid, you can probably just cut their dose. Yeah, I would usually hold it for 1 or 2 weeks and then put them back on a lower dose, wait 4 to 6 weeks and recheck it. That's good. TSH 0.1 to 0.2 and the patient is asymptomatic, meaning they're not anxious, tachycardic, palpitations, tremors, heat intolerance, or short of breath. If that's the case and it's 0.1 to 0.2, probably if their blood pressure will allow it, start a beta blocker every time, hold it for 2 to 4 weeks, then reassess what dose you think they should be at, put them on that dose. And the hard thing here is waiting. You really need to wait 4 to 6 weeks. That's how long it takes. And just keep rechecking it every week isn't going to help you because that TSH really is not going to level off for about 4 weeks. Wait 6 if you want to be really compulsive. TSH less than 0.1 or anything less than 0.4 with symptoms, you need to stop the thyroid supplement. You have to start a beta blocker unless their blood pressure or pulse just won't allow it. You probably need to start methimazole and you might have to start prednisone for at least 2 to 3 weeks. If I get anybody down less than 0.02 and it's a patient that I'm in charge of, they get them all. Because the atrial fib, the other issues are just the risk is too high. So I stop their thyroid, put them on methimazole. I usually start 5 milligrams twice a day. I certainly, if they're symptomatic, am not the least bit shy about going to 10 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day. And I put them on a prednisone burst and taper it over about 3 weeks to try to, again, that's to try to stop that peripheral conversion of T4 to T3. If you feel uncomfortable doing that, that's fine. Send them to an endocrinologist, but don't wait to do some of these steps in the middle. Yeah, sorry. I'm going to skip the next slide. Real quick, a pearl here. Non-synthetic thyroid supplements like Armour Thyroid. This pearl is really simple. Don't. Okay. So now to review the pearls. Number one, check the TSH. Leave it at that. Number two, don't trust thyroid labs drawn during an acute illness or hospitalization, unless it was about for non-thyroidal illness. Number three, seniors, the ideal TSH, 4 to 6. Number four, TSH less than 2 in seniors may represent subclinical hyperthyroidism, and it has increased clinical risks. You want to deal with that. Number five, use clinical symptoms to decide in someone with a TSH of 6 to 10 whether or not you need to change their dose or even treat them. Number six, thyroid Thursdays. Think about weekly dosing. Number seven, hyperthyroidism treatment always starts with a beta blocker. We didn't talk about why. We could do that offline if you have questions. Often includes methimazole. Two bonus pearls. The first one, don't use Armour Thyroid, or because in the reason for that is it's just crushed thyroid from a pig or a cow or something, and you have no idea how much of it is T3, how much is T4. There may be some immunologic issues you don't want to have to deal with. And the only other pearl I'm going to add to all of this before we get to questions is remember to stop biotin 2 days ahead of time. There we go. Thyroid in 28 minutes. Questions?
I have a quick question. So on the weekly thyroid dosing, how and when do you check to make sure they're therapeutic for the TSH?
Yeah. The easiest thing is if their TSH is right where you want it to be and they're getting 100 micrograms a day, you just multiply it by 7. As a first approximation, it's the same dose, 7 times. Typically, that's going to provide about 10% less than they may actually need. But thyroid is not so exact that you need their TSH at 4.25. Yeah. So it's usually, that's the first approximation. The other thing, couple real quick things I didn't talk about. Whenever I see somebody on 200 micrograms a day, 150 or more micrograms of thyroid a day, I'm always looking, where's their PPI? We need to get rid of it. They're getting it with food. Even though it's ordered for 5 a.m., I want to talk to their nurses and find out they're really giving it without the other drugs. They're not absorbing it. They're either not taking it or they're not absorbing it. People just don't need that much. The flip side of that, somebody that's been there for years and they're on 25 whole micrograms a day, they're not on enough thyroid to really make a difference. Those folks, if their TSH is normal, you know, somewhere 3, 4, 5, I go ahead and what I do personally, stop that, put it on hold, 0, check 4 to 6 weeks later. Now if their TSH is above 10, 10, 12, 15, fine, they needed it. But if it's still 5, 6, they probably never needed it. It was probably started during an acute hospitalization and just never stopped.
So with the weekly dosing, does it matter when you check the TSH? Do you have to time that
with
the weekly?
Nope.
So with the dose during the week, because they're getting it all at one time, does it matter what day during that week that you draw the lab?
It really does not. And actually, there's some older data about that. It looks, and they found that the TSH may be on day 1, 2, and 3, maybe 3% lower than it is on day 4 to 7. But it's not enough again.
Now, for those patients that can't swallow pills, and having to give it in something, I've had some TSHs go crazy with yogurt or pudding or ice cream.
Yeah,
is applesauce okay?
Yeah, applesauce is fine. The least caloric thing that you can crush it and put it in with is going to be the best. Because you know ahead of time if you have to do that, you're probably going to have to, for two reasons, you're probably going to have to increase the dose a little. One is you probably don't get them to eat every bite of the applesauce, so you're probably not going to get it all. And second, that's probably going to decrease absorption just a little bit. So you may have to go up a little bit on the dose, but yes, you can crush it.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody. That's the end of the session, and we'll see you next month.
If you are a physician and interested in obtaining ABPLM, pre-approved certified medical director credits for certification or recertification, please email cmd@paltc.org with your name and the podcast title. Thank you.